Radio Free Readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Good morning, Patriots. This is the John Jacob Schmidt Show, right here at the Voice of the American Redoubt. My name is your name, too, if you're a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot in the fight for Americanism and all that we cherish. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for being in the fight with us, and it is a fight. I hope you had a blessed week this week. We've got a lot of stuff to cover, lots of news and updates that I'm looking forward to sharing with you today over the next hour. Once again, another week with no dull news cycle as our world's changing so quickly before our eyes. In America, the once great city on a hill. Hey, thank you guys for tuning in at our new station out of Spokane, 96.5 KTW FM, listening in North Idaho, Spokane, Spokane Valley, and the surrounding area. And of course, all of you out there in the Tri-Cities, Wenatchee, Yakima, Moses Lake, all over. You guys, what a great, great group of people. Thank you for your prayers, your encouragement, your input. I love it. I love it. Okay. Now, let's get into the news and commentary from AP, UPI, and the major American networks and the Stars and Stripes. The news is next right here on Radio Free Redoubt, brought to you by Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series about the socioeconomic collapse of America and the rebuilding. All 10 books are out, including audio. Go to 299days.com. International news. I woke up and I was just sickened to see 81 people dead in Afghanistan, 286 injured, lives torn apart, shattered, because they were demonstrating, requesting that commercial power lines come through their province so that they could have some type of economic boost. And they're making their appeal, and two, apparently, Taliban suicide bombers detonated vests, killing 80 men, women, and children. It's just, this is such a sick, perverted ideology. It just is incomprehensible. Yesterday we saw Munich once again just torn apart. A active shooter goes on a shooting rampage. Now there's 9 dead, 20-something wounded. And I've followed this very closely as this unfolded. And we started seeing reports about, you know, Islamic male or Arabic looking male shooting on a shooting rampage. And all of a sudden, everything started to shift. Did you guys catch this? It's well, he could be a right wing extremist. He could be a anti-immigration neo-Nazi type. And they started spinning it. They want an active shooter to be a right wing extremist so badly that they will begin without the facts, purely speculation, and it goes viral because that's what they want it to be. And here's one article after another, motivated by far right xenophobia or anti-immigration, right wing, let's see, what else? Right wing terrorists kill 8 in Munich, indicating this was a right wing anti-immigration deal. I mean, just one after another. I got a whole string of them that I saved here. because I knew this was gonna change. Now we've got eyewitness reports on the street saying this guy was screaming Allahu Akbar as he's pulling the trigger. But isn't it amazing how that gets buried from the lamestream media? It's not fitting their hopeful, wishful narrative that it's a right-wing, anti-immigration, xenophobic, Islamic-hating right-wing extremist. But that wasn't the case. And now we find out that the police are saying that he was a Iranian, came to Germany from Iran 2 years ago, another immigrant, yelling Allahu Akbar. And all for about a 2 hour cycle, everything was going out saying this was linked to right wing anti-immigration extremism. This is these guys got to be working together. They're using the same terminology. And now the police are coming out. Oh, and then the police chief said, we are not going to say whether or not this was Islamic. We're not going to say what the motivations were. Even as the Allahu Akbar witness testimony started coming in, we're not going to call it terrorism, and we're not going to call it. They changed it from terrorism to a rampage, shooting rampage. They started using the terminology shooting rampage. And started, because we don't know if it's terrorism, and we won't know until we're able to look through all of his social media and phone texts. Now the official story is the Munich attacker. They're saying this is not related to terrorism already. Why? The reason why is because he has no links to Islamic State. Is that the standard now? If you yell Allahu Akbar and mow people down, as long as you don't have any links to Islamic State, one single specific organization, it's not terrorism. We're losing our minds. Europe, gone. And the United States is trying so hard to be right on their heels. This is maddening. This is supernatural. This is demonic level type of warfare that's going on. For people to have completely their eyes to be veiled to this. And Obama gives a speech saying the attack in Munich didn't prove Trump was right about the emerging threat of terrorism. No, we're going to continue being in denial. Terrorism, I'm quoting Obama from his speech. Terrorism is a real threat, and nobody knows that better than me. One of the most protected people on earth, right? One of the best ways of preventing it, I'm on the edge of my seat, is making sure we don't divide our own country. This is President Obama saying one of the best ways of preventing terrorism is by making sure we don't divide our own country. Who's contributed to more division in our country than anybody in recent history that I can think of. He says also that we don't succumb to fear. Really? We shouldn't succumb to fear. Is that why you're calling for a ban on guns? Because you're succumbing to fear, especially if you think that will be a solution. And don't think that banning guns won't divide our country further. Anyway, I continue. He says that we don't sacrifice our values. Huh? One of the best ways of preventing it is also to make sure we don't sacrifice our values. You've completely, fundamentally transformed America 180 degrees from our traditional American values, and now that's the best way. I agree. I actually agree with him. One of the best ways of preventing terrorism is to make sure we don't sacrifice our values. That he's already sacrificed. Saying the same words, but with two different sets of intentions in our hearts. And then we send a very strong signal to the world and to every American citizen. What? What is this very strong signal you want to send? Oh, that we're all in this together. We are all in this together because he's dragging us down together. Into it. Bring in 100,000 Muslims The French government is trying to force local officials on that Nice attack to delete the video of the crime going around to these different businesses. An act, of course, which might hamper the investigation and also hamper evidence that the driver did not act alone. The media is complicit in this. Out of the Telegraph, Nice is rejecting police requests to wipe CCTV footage of Bastille Day. Why would they be wanting them to, why would they be going around telling the city all of your surveillance footage, street camera footage, we want you to wipe it? You're kidding me. More insanity. Now, let's go to national news. Last night, I sat in on one of Chris Ann Hall's constitutional attorney presentations. Amazing. She's always amazing. She's great. She used a term that I've been searching and grasping for and couldn't find it. When I said the solution in America is not in Washington, D.C., that's the source. If you truly want to take back America, you're going to have to roll up your sleeves and you're going to have to fight in the gutter and duke it out at the local level. You're going to have to fight like your survival depends on it and take America back locally, from your city councilman to your county commissioner to your sheriff, right on up the line, all the way to your state level. Locally is the only hope. And this is what the term that she used. People have to realize there is no presidential messiah. And that is precisely the word I've been looking for. Presidential messiah. Because that's what people are putting all of their hope into. I'm not saying to vote for Trump or to not vote for Trump. I know one thing. I do not want to see Hillary in that position at all, for many reasons. This is the Voice of the American Redoubt. We'll be back in just a minute.
This is your Patriot Moment with Bruce DeLay. This week, General Wesley Clark, a well-known progressive who ran for president as a Democrat, said that we should put people who are disloyal to America in internment camps just like World War II. This on the heels of an Islamic jihadist who killed 5 U.S. service members in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Yet the reality is, which America is General Clark talking about? The progressive socialist state that has true Americans so frustrated these days? If so, then it could be that the left has tipped their hand as to their future intentions with God-fearing, freedom-loving, traditional Christian Americans like you and me. Wake up, America. You may soon be seen as the officially disloyal ones by this administration. This is Bruce DeLay, and this is your Patriot Moment.
There is an exodus happening in America today, from cities full of crime and corruption to the rural areas of clean and sustainable living. Like-minded patriots are coming to North Idaho in search of a simpler, self-reliant lifestyle. I'm Chris Walsh, broker and owner of Revolutionary Realty, based in the heart of America's Great Redoubt, North Idaho. Sometimes God puts you somewhere for a special reason. For me, I believe it's to help like-minded patriots find safety and security for their loved ones. At Revolutionary Realty, we educate buyers about solar power, growing food, obtaining water, and personal security. I became a realtor in 2008 at the bottom of the real estate market, but not the top. I believe that there is a grand plan and that I'm just a part of it. My job is to help people discover and relocate to America's Great Redoubt. Call a revolutionary today at 208-667-1776 or visit us at revrealty.us to learn more. That's www.revrealty.us, and God bless you.
This is the Voice of the American Redoubt, the voice of resistance, against everything that's setting itself against our values and Americanism. Thank you guys for being in the fight. If you're not in the fight, you need to make some changes. This segment is brought to you by Works Holsters, lifetime guarantee on all their products, W-E-R-K-Z, for your custom-made holsters made right here in the American Redoubt. Go to works.com to check them out. Also, I want to give you a resource here. If you are looking, well, I'm looking for a resource for Washington. Somebody sent me in a resource for Idaho. It's called PACTRACK, P-A-C, as in Political Action Committee, track.org, PACTRACK.org, to find out who is funding your elected officials, who is backing their campaigns. That will tell you a lot about their loyalties and what they will, you can expect from them in as far as performance goes versus what they say on the campaign trail. Now, back to Chris Ann Hall talking about not looking for a presidential messiah. I only watched, you know, just a couple bits and pieces of Ben Carson. Oh, I love that guy. That's my president. That's who I was hoping for going for. You know, I looked back and I realized in the last three election cycles in the primaries, it was a black presidential candidate that I had at the very top of my list. Talking about judging people by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. You know, and it wasn't because of, you know, made me feel better because I have white guilt or anything like that. It's just we need to pick the right man for the job, the values, the things that he stands for. And I, you know, I did listen to bits and pieces and a lot of commentary after Trump's speech. It's interesting also to note there's no mention of working to stop the murder of unborn millions of babies. Not a priority. No mention of preserving traditional marriage the way God designed it. Not a priority. In fact, I did see the statement where he made a bold statement about how hard he's going to work to defend the LGBTQ community from those evil foreigners. What about the rest of us? I mean, why'd you make a special point? You're going to fight so hard to protect them from terrorists. Now you got 1% of our country now is going to get special mention and special treatment for protection from terrorism. I don't get it. Look, there's only one solution. There is only one solution, and I didn't hear it mentioned once from the man who portends to be on the platform to make America great again. The one solution, all the solutions he's going to be bringing, which is we should have been doing for the last 20 years, there's one solution that will make America great again. And that is if we cry out and humble ourselves and turn back to God. And that's the one solution that's not on the table. It's not being discussed. It's being ignored. That's the one solution that our country is not only rejecting, but declaring war on. So you want to know what's coming next? You don't have to be a prophet. All you have to do is dust off that book that says Holy Bible on it, open it up, and start reading about how God dealt with his people when they rebelled against him. Now you know what's coming. The next thing to do is brace for impact. What more can I say? There's your doom and gloom message for the day. With solutions built in, there is California, the Democratic People's Republic of one each, is fully gone. Now introducing homosexual curriculum by mandate to the second grade level. Now State Bill 1146 would restrict the ability of schools, including higher education, to apply faith convictions in everything from admissions policies to conduct standards, to housing accommodations and employment practices. So you want to raise up godly offspring. You want them to have a higher education. So what's the wise, prudent, and responsible thing to do? You send your children to a Christian college. Well, that's just not good enough. Remember what I said, the liberals will not just let you live the way you want to over there. They'll live the way they want to over here, and then everybody just gets along. No. If you reject their agenda, they are going to chase you down, and that's what they're doing with 1146 in California. Why are you still in California? It is fully occupied territory. Now, I have to say, you have to prayerfully make your decision to strategically relocate. Some people are called to be on the front lines. Some people are called to be on different front lines than others. Some people are called to work with the underground church in Iran or Afghanistan or Pakistan or Uganda or California. So, hey, Godspeed to you guys that are in the fight, that are digging in deep, and that's the right thing to do. If that's where you are planted, you bloom right there. You fight for all that you know is right and just where you are. But in the grander scheme of things, as you all know, I'm a proponent of strategically relocating to strengthen those areas that are traditionally very conservative. But this is pretty scary stuff. Now you're going to send your daughter to a Christian school to protect her so she can get a good education. And now by this law, some transgender guy is going to be housing with her in the dorms because, well, the school's going to lose its accreditation, or actually they're losing grant access if they don't comply. They'll stop getting grants from Cal Grant. They're going to yank their funding out from under them. Attorney General unilaterally bans combat rifles in Massachusetts. They have a gun law that says if you own it's almost identical to Clinton's so-called gun ban. It couldn't have a collapsible stock and a bayonet. Oh, it can't have a bayonet lug at all. It can't have a flash suppressor. Can't have a pistol grip. It can't have a combination of a pistol grip and a collapsible stock. All this stuff, basically reconfiguring the AR platform. Well, Massachusetts has this law. It's legal to purchase those, similar to the post-Clinton ban. You can still buy an AR-15 or an AK-47, but it had to be configured in this certain way because everybody knows that a combat rifle is way more dangerous if it has a flash suppressor or a bayonet lug on it, right? I have not heard of a single bayonet slashing mounted to a rifle attack ever. Maybe Afghanistan. I don't know. But anyway, it makes the liberals feel better about themselves. But you could still buy these firearms. They just couldn't have these certain accoutrements. Well, the attorney general just said, as of yesterday, no more. These guns are banned. I hereby, as attorney general, declare these guns banned. If what he calls them is a copy, or she calls them a copycat, it's a copy or a duplicate, and it is illegal. Assault weapons prohibited under our laws cannot be altered in any way to make their sale or possession legal in Massachusetts. Arbitrarily, single-handedly, unilaterally bans all these guns that the legislature deems legal. We recognize that most residents, quoting, we recognize that most residents who purchased these guns in the past believe they were doing so legally. So this directive will not apply to possession of guns purchased before Wednesday. What? These are so evil that you have to take them off the shelf, even though there's no law. You just made up a law. You completely sidestepped. No separation of powers here. Because the legislature, who made up of representatives of the people, voted to be able to have AK-47s and AR-15s as long as they didn't have flash suppressors, pistol grips, or collapsible stocks, or bayonet lugs, and 10-round magazines, anything exceeding 10-round magazines, yada-da. Okay, so you could still buy them. No more. By one person's declaration, even though, according to all the reports that I've found, not one single mass shooting has taken place in Massachusetts using a long gun of any type. Where was this? I don't have that right in front of me. Amazing. The gun industry has openly defied their laws in Massachusetts, is what they're saying. So we have a moral and legal responsibility to ensure that combat-style weapons are off the streets and out of the hands of those who would use them to kill innocent people. So in the doing so, they're going to keep them out of the hands of those who would defend. They're saying this is the weapon of choice, the AR-15, AK-47. These are the weapons of choice for mass shooters. And we'll do everything we can to prevent the kinds of tragedies here that have occurred in places like Orlando, San Bernardino, Newborn, Aurora. Okay. Those are the preferred weapons of mass shooters, which is why it's the preferred weapon of law-abiding citizens who wish to defend themselves. Because these guns are the weapon of choice for sick, degenerate, or Islamic terrorist groups, it's why it's the weapon of choice for law enforcement. In other words, the only thing that you can stop with a determined gunman using force to kill people is a good person with a gun determined to kill the bad guy. You're not going to use harsh language. You're not going to use pepper spray. You're not going to use laws or fancy signs to stop them. It takes armed people to stop a bad guy with a gun. There's no substitute, except for maybe a robot with a pound of explosives. We'd start issuing those to citizens. So here's something interesting. Indeed, the fact that Massachusetts has so few murders committed using assault weapons could be seen as evidence that the original ban was successful. Hold on. The fact that Massachusetts has so few murders committed using assault weapons could be seen as evidence that the original ban was successful. It was successful because last year alone, 10,000 AK-47s and AR-15s and those variants, combat rifles, 10,000 combat rifles were sold in Massachusetts last year. 10,000 in 1 year were sold, not one mass shooting with one of them, but they're saying that the fact Massachusetts has so few murders committed using assault weapons could be seen as evidence that the original ban was successful. It must be because they didn't have a flash suppressor or a bayonet lug on. And this is what Obama says before we go into the break. In the same speech, he says, we must ban all assault weapons because federal background checks simply don't work. And he turns around and says, don't worry about the 100,000 Muslim refugees. They're all getting federal background checks. How does that math work?
As you have seen, reporting to the communists means distortion. But that is what people in the captive countries hear and see. And it's all they would hear and see if the free world could not pierce the Iron Curtain with words of truth. But the free world does pierce the Iron Curtain. From headquarters in Munich, a powerful radio network, Radio Free Europe, operates 29 broadcasting and relay stations in West Germany and Portugal. Broadcasts are beamed behind the Iron Curtain as many as 20 hours a day. One transmitter is 14 times as powerful as the largest station in America. It has to be powerful, because the communists spend more money trying to jam reception than Radio Free Europe spends in broadcasting. to gather information for its broadcasts and to counter communist distortions. Radio Free Europe monitors 35 communist stations daily. This requires highly specialized equipment and experienced personnel. Rely on Radio Free Europe for the truth.
This is Radio Free Redoubt. I am John Jacob Schmidt, your host. You are tuned in to Radio Free Redoubt for the truth. We are monitoring all of the communist communications, and we are bringing you the truth, slicing through their lies. Segment three is brought to you by RiverfrontSuites.com. If you need to get away for a weekend, or if you are in the area scouting things out for job opportunities and land, you need a roof over your head. Don't forget to check out RiverfrontSuites.com. Beautiful little places situated along the St. Joe River near St. Mary's, Idaho, and close to, well, centrally located to Moscow and Coeur d'Alene and Spokane. Great place. My email is johnjacob@radiofreeredoubt.com. Always appreciate your constructive feedback and your prayers and your support. Also, don't forget about our Facebook, facebook.com/radiofreeredoubt. I no longer have a John Jacob Schmidt Facebook account because the Southern Poverty Law Center threw a fit that I was in violation of Facebook policies. And so they sent Facebook a complaint and they blocked my site saying, you have to use your real name and we need to see a driver's license with picture ID before we can reactivate your account. And I said, see ya. So facebook.com/radiofreeredoubt and amron.com for the American Redoubt Radio Operators Network. I want to real quick before we bring our guest on, which I'm really excited about because we're going to get some updates, talk about something very near and dear to my heart, a veteran who was convicted for building ponds. You guys remember this from about 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago. We got some updates for you. I want to remind you to go to Mac4Lands. That's M-A-C, the number 4Lands.com. Read up on Steve McLaughlin. That is the man that you want in that place for the public lands commissioner. Elections are coming up and you want to put patriots who have liberty at the forefront of their agenda and government accountability and just good, wise people. Steve McLaughlin for public lands commissioner. There's several out there. We're going to get a voter guide up for you guys. I'll be mentioning that next week. Several folks have asked. Now, it is an honor to bring on somebody who's been doing an absolutely amazing job getting the truth out, Hello? Covering events, and there's definitely a need for it, specifically dealing with the American Redoubt and redoubt issues in Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, Eastern Washington, and Eastern Oregon, things that affect us as God-fearing patriots. And they've been covering this Joe Robertson situation over in Montana where Joe Robertson was convicted, just sentenced for building ponds. This is just an atrocity in my mind. This is a completely inversion to justice. And Sherry Duvall from Redoubt News has been covering this as well. And she was there this week at the sentencing of Joe Robertson. Eyewitness account, lots of information that's still coming out. We're in contact with the family. And so, Sherry, thank you so much for being with us on Radio Free Redoubt.
Thank you for having me. John, can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am. You're coming through loud and clear.
Good. My phone just got zapped, and I thought my speaker went out, but...
Wasn't me.
It
didn't
happens.
Do it. Okay. Let's go back to this case. Joe Robertson, 77-year-old veteran, and he built – we did this interview with him. It angered me, and we're going to talk about this. He used the judge and the prosecutor in his sentencing took the interview he did here at Radio Free Readout with me into account to deliver this, what they called a harsh sentence, was a result of his words, what he was saying. This is just infuriating to me. Obvious that they either didn't listen to or ignored key parts of that interview to be able to do this to him. So for the listeners, won't you bring us all up to speed on what happened this week?
It was heartbreaking. We had about 50 patriots gather the morning of the sentencing, which was Wednesday, the 20th. They spent some time with Joe and with his wife, Carrie, and his dog, Sasha, knowing that they may not see him again for a while, but I guess deep down nobody really believed it would happen. He's a disabled vet. He's very soft-spoken. I've never seen him carry a weapon. I've never heard him raise his voice, even though I know he's been angry. He's just a nice, gentle man. He's disabled with PTSD, and he has regular inpatient treatment for this, which he no longer will have. But on, it was a 3.5-hour sentencing hearing, which was, you know, unheard of almost. Just in that respect, they spent about an hour arguing motions based on U.S. v. Hawks, which was a ruling that came out of the Supreme Court after Joe was convicted. And I'm not sure if how the law works. I'm not a lawyer. But I'm told that that should not have been argued only because the conviction had already taken place. But again, I don't know how that works. But they spent about an hour arguing the ruling on that case, and the judge was already prepared for that. He had several pages pre-written that he read from for his ruling. Then they went into the pre-sentencing report, which the defense did not give much input on that at all. The most that I heard him say was, basically, he knew that he and Joe didn't get along real well, but he's a nice guy, so he asked the judge to be generous with him. And that was about the extent of the defense. The prosecution, however, tore into Joe up one side and down the other. Then he tore into the people in the gallery. They were all obviously very upset that there were so many people in the gallery watching the sentencing. They referred to the people. They said, they started out by saying they were only here because Joe flat out lied to them, and that Joe is a criminal, and they were just trying to incite everybody, and they did that. There were very, very many people upset. Lot of comments from the gallery. One person was removed at that point.
For what?
Her name is Maureen. A lot of people know her as Sergeant Mo. She was asked to leave the courtroom when, you know, she was flabbergasted. She just inadvertently spoke out a little bit, and the judge jumped on that to have her removed.
Okay, so he's trying to remove people that are disrupting.
Then the prosecution continued, and he started referring to the spectators as Joe's Malheur friends.
Malheur as in Oregon, Malheur, Oregon.
Yes. And
nice.
I inadvertently
nice
coughed. It was kind of a unintended reaction, but that's when I was removed. The judge,
you were removed,
didn't like, you know, me making any noise whatsoever, so I was asked to leave the courtroom. But I did have quite a few people in there that gave me the same updates afterwards, so I know that everything that I reported is accurate. But the sentencing results, if you'd like to hear the entire list, was extremely ridiculous.
Let's
hear it. 18 months in prison for each count that he was convicted on, but they were to be served concurrently. He's got 5 years of probation, with the first three being supervised. He's got a lifetime ban of his Second Amendment rights. And the judge was very specific about this. He can't ride in a car if somebody else has a firearm on him. He can't go into somebody else's home if they even own a firearm. Anybody who inadvertently brings a firearm on his property puts him in violation. He was laying it all out. The restitution was unbelievable. It's under the Mandatory Victim Restitution Act. And to be specifically noted, the government did not follow the time requirements that they were given to file this paperwork. But the judge called all that harmless. Even though everybody else is being held to details, the government was not.
Right, of course.
Now, the amounts, they broke it down. There were several thousand dollars for permitting, which, in actual fact, they already have permits in place under the Nationwide Permit Number 14, and they don't need those other permits, but they're going to charge Joe for them anyway. Now, when you break it all down, it actually totals out to be just about $130,000 for that part of it, which is the part that they say it's going to cost them to repair all of what they call damage. But there were other fees on top of that, which included $12,000 to be paid immediately to the public defender that failed Joe. There were some special assessments and some smaller fees, $300 on one of them. There's just a lot of little things added up, and it's going to be well over $130,000 that Joe has to pay.
Okay.
That includes he has to pay for substance abuse treatment. Now, that was never brought up, but they're saying that Joe's an alcoholic. And, again, this is the first I had heard anything about alcohol even being brought up in the case. But they're going to require him to go through treatment and pay for that. He's not allowed to go into any establishment that primarily serves alcohol, et cetera, et cetera. He's also got to get mental health treatment. Let's see here. He cannot apply for credit unless the court approves it. So he has to go through the courts in order to get any sort of credit at all. He cannot refuse any form of law enforcement to search him, his car, his property, or anywhere he's at. And that includes forest rangers, EPA, and BLM.
Oh, wow.
And so, this one really gets to me. He's not allowed to have any sort of surveillance cameras or recording devices around his property, around his vehicle, or on his person.
No surveillance, no video cameras, no digital pocket recorders, nothing.
Nothing. And this is notable because Kerry Robertson disclosed to me that right after the hearing that 2 days prior to that they had received some threats of somebody planning on burning down their property. Well, they need their surveillance cameras in case something does happen and they can catch it. Well, they're not allowed that anymore.
Okay, let me ask you this. What about if he's in prison for 18 months, his wife is living alone at the home. Why couldn't she put up video surveillance cameras?
Well, I don't think they can really stop her, but I don't know for sure. I know that once he's released, they can't have them. I don't know the technicalities. Yeah. Not being a lawyer, there are, certain things that I just don't understand yet. But I believe she'll probably be okay until he gets released.
Huh. Well, I wonder if that'll work for others. Like maybe we could ban Hillary from being around any computers from now on.
Well, or at least being around private servers, maybe.
There's several things I want to follow up with on this. First of all, I'm looking at your article that you wrote. It says, additionally, Nelson, the prosecutor, referenced an interview with John Jacob Schmidt from Radio Free Redoubt and said that Joe had threatened the Forest Service and the court with statements on the show saying that he, Robertson, will avail himself of his Second Amendment rights. Now, yeah. I went back and I listened to that show, and he did not say anything about Second Amendment rights. I'm the one that said things about Second Amendment rights. What he actually said something to the effect, I should have written the transcript of it, but basically feeling pushed to do something, he says, and we can't do that. We basically, he's denied taking drastic measures in that portion of it. But I have the words that I said right here. I want to play those for you. So just listen to this. Recourse. They're out of options. And this type of tyranny is what's forced people to feel that there is no other option than to do something drastic, like take over a wildlife refuge or to gather militias to hold the federal supremacists back to keep cattle from being stolen. This is the type of thing that's pushing citizens to just feel like there's no other options. And this is maddening. Now, I'm not convinced that we're completely out of options here. We have to resort to, you know, other like the Second Amendment type of options. And right there, that's where I brought up the Second Amendment. And I said, I'm not convinced that we're completely out of options where we have to resort to things like the Second Amendment. And that's when I said there are other people that are on this. So there's other alternatives and solutions, although people do obviously feel this strongly and they feel like they are out of options. This is precisely what led to the foundation of our country when people left were without recourse and they were without any other options than to resort to physically defending their property and their rights, which I also told him, I don't think we're there yet. He also said with his own words, he said, I don't want to feel like we're pushed to that because we can't do that. We can't do that as an option. And, but to use this in his sentencing, to immediately put him in handcuffs, haul him away because he's a danger to himself and others is just preposterous.
I don't believe everybody there heard the interview, including the judge. I do believe one person may have noted that he was on your show and the Second Amendment was discussed, but they turned around and twisted it against him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's all it was. They just used every excuse, and the defense did not object at any point.
Well, it was an ambush.
The defense did not object to anything that the prosecution did. When the prosecutor said he needs to be put in cuffs right here in the courtroom, the defense didn't object. When they were painting him as this, you know, evil person, the defense never once objected. When the judge was painting him as a terrible person, the defense never objected. Not once.
As I've been reviewing this with law enforcement and legal personnel, there is a very, very strong case for an appeal. So this part is encouraging. Step one, get rid of this limp noodle thing that's posing as a defense attorney and get him out of the picture. There are some illegal organizations that are looking very strongly at this, and it appears he has a very strong case for an appeal. So that's our hope and that's our prayer. I want to reference back to April 7th press release by the government announcing the conviction of Joe Robertson for violations and destruction of U.S. property. Now, it's my understanding they produced no evidence but only claims. The claims without supporting evidence by the Corps of Engineers, U.S. Forest Service personnel, but there were two independent studies that clearly showed there was no disturbance of these waters that they refused to admit into the trial to convict him. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. The first study actually was paid for by the defense, and it was available for the first trial, and the defense refused to use it.
Why?
And he again refused to use it at the second trial. And it didn't just say what you just summarized. It actually said that Joe improved the land.
Mm. Why did the defense not admit it?
Actually say that Joe improved the land, and there's no way it could have touched the waters of the United States because the Jefferson River that they were referring to is 60 miles away.
Okay, Sherry, hold on. Why did they not? Did the defense not admit that evidence?
Well, Joe said that the defense attorney, Mike Donahoe, told him that the guy was kind of iffy. And that's the only response that Joe could get out of him. It sounded, however, to me, as a layman spectator looking in, that the report didn't come out exactly the way Donahoe expected it to. He said that he would rather use the EPA as they are the true experts.
Oh, sure. They're very efficient. They never make mistakes, like dump contaminants into the river in Colorado and things like that.
Oh, absolutely. Now, the second report was done by Ray Cagle of Cagle Environmental, and I believe he's out of Riggins, Idaho. He's got a long list of credentials, including a career with the Army Corps of Engineers, and where he actually ran that department for a long time in that area. His report is almost identical to the first report.
Yeah,
now, it was done after the second trial, but it was available at the sentencing. And he filed to speak at the sentencing, but was never allowed to speak, and the report never got submitted.
Because they were on an agenda.
Oh, absolutely.
In fact,
Ray traveled
this judge
to be at the sentencing, had several copies of the report available for the court, and the defense refused to submit it.
And this district judge Malloy, who has a long track record of environmental cases, championing for this chokehold in the name of saving the environment. And he was on senior status, retired, comes out of retirement specifically to deal with this case, as the reports that I'm receiving all indicate.
Yes, and he has a history with Joe personally. He does not like Joe personally.
Yeah.
So he should have been recused for that reason, if nothing else.
All right, let me address something else here. In this conviction, they're saying that he built these ponds on land claiming to be his, and they're saying it is not true. This is U.S. Forest Service land and not on his own land. Can you shed some light on that?
Well, a lot of that has to do with his unpatented mining claims, okay, where he does have claims on there. He actually owns about 200 acres. Part of his land was illegally sold. Actually, two parcels illegally sold in sheriff sales. Now, that just brings up the fact that the sheriff was complicit. Okay, he was not a constitutional sheriff.
How do we know that those were illegally sold in sheriff sales?
Well, for one thing, he's gotten one of them back.
Oh, he did? Okay.
He had to use an attorney and go through the court system, and one of the parcels has been returned. The other one is in litigation right now. Apparently, according to the Robertsons, it looks very good that they'll be getting that one back shortly.
And is this the land that they're claiming is not his, that he built a pond on?
Basically, what it is there is a spot of land, and this is the way I understand it. There's a small parcel of land that is Forest Service land that he actually has the unpatented mining claim on. Now, his other property completely surrounds it. And he did about, I want to say, 9 ponds all together throughout everything. And most of those were designed for fire prevention to protect all of the land, his community, land, his neighbor's land, and the Forest Service land. And they were not filled by any rivers. They were filled by underground springs from his property.
Right.
He had permission from the Forest Service to do this. They knew exactly what he was doing. He had any permits they asked for, he put in, and they weren't even required, but he did it anyway. He had complete permission to do everything that he did on whichever parcels that they discussed.
And it's my understanding also.
But then they turned around and said, no, we changed our mind and called in the EPA.
It's my understanding also that he has been doing this a long time professionally as an excavator. He's not just out there with a shovel making a mess, digging holes wherever he wants. I mean, he's put in numerous put in ponds with meeting all of the requirements and regulations. He's very experienced at this.
Oh yes, absolutely. And he was even putting up a bridge to help get the equipment back and forth into other parts of the land just to help people out. He was putting this in himself, and they stopped him halfway through that and said, you can't finish your bridge. And that's been 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, we covered that. Well, Sherry, we are out of time. I want to thank you so much for taking the time. We could go over this for another half an hour. There's so much to this story. But put the information out where people can go to Readout News to learn more and follow this.
I will be putting out one or two more articles this weekend on updates on Joe. So tune in to Readout News and you'll see some more.
Okay, so that's readoutnews.com.
Yes, readoutnews.com.
Outstanding. Well, you folks are doing a great, great job over there. Readout News has expanded. It has just been such a great, complimentary addition to getting the news and truth out there to the people alongside Radio for Readout. And I want to thank you guys for everything that you're doing. So, Sherry, God bless you guys and the work that you're doing. Continue to do it. This is John Jacob Schmidt with Radio Free Readout. Join us tomorrow night at 8 p.m. for our weekly podcast at RadioFreeReadout.com.